So we can start right away?
Yep.
Okay.
So, The Vault Beneath My Feet was your first feature, I heard.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, Beneath My Feet was my first feature film. Very exciting to work on it. Fantastic crew, wonderful cast. And yeah, it was just a great opportunity. And yeah, very excited to be here at Berlin to have its European premiere. And last night we had an amazing packed out crowd of 1,000 people. And I've never experienced such a positive audience.
That's great. Yeah. Sounds great.
So, and the comments, the Q&A afterwards, was it great as well?
Yeah, the Q&A was well led, and it was open up to the floor. Some great intelligent questions, some questions that made us think. Yes, it was great just to be able to just share our experiences of making the film and be able to, you know, give credit to everyone who worked on it.
So you said it was an opportunity. So when did the story come up to you? When did you have a chance to read the script and say, yeah, that's great, let's do it?
Yeah, well, I mean, in some ways it came out of the blue. So I was sent the script and just read it and, you know, connected with it. I was excited. It was a film about music. It was a film about, you know, a young boy on a journey to kind of discovery, some coming of age. So some creativity in the story, some humor in the story, so it appealed to me in a lot of ways. And so I worked with the producers to just kind of hone the script in and make sure we could actually make a film that was going to translate to as large an audience as possible. And yeah, just had a, you know, it's obviously like any film, very hard work, but it was a great process. We had a good team working together.
So was it clear from the script that you had to do a lot of music videos within your movie?
No, not from the script. That came about as a result of part of the process of, you know, seeing the script, realizing it was ambitious, realizing we had a limited budget as well as very limited time, like 18 days to shoot the thing. So often with music videos, you might have 1 to 2 days to shoot each video sequence. With our schedule, we had to shoot about 7 or 8 minutes of drama a day, so we wouldn't be able to shoot videos in a conventional way. So that then the idea came about. I just thought, well, we need to do this in a different way. We haven't got time to shoot these scenes, so let's do it in animation. Let's use animation techniques, you know, and make these in a creative way. Let's solve the problem creatively, because we haven't got money that we can just throw at the problem. We can't just give ourselves an extra week. So we decided to use different techniques to make these little stories, and it created a way for us to explore our characters' imagination in ways that perhaps we haven't seen before, or ways that will kind of interest and excite our audience in a different sort of way. So it became a creative way of solving the problem. But I think from the feedback from people, it's a definite asset to the film. It gives it something else. It kind of jumps out and it gives you, you know, something new.
So you found somebody who said, okay, I'm gonna do a script for the music video and the storyboards, and that's how it's gonna be? Or did you do it yourself?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've worked on quite a few music videos, Radiohead, Coldplay, The Offspring. So it's a familiar territory to me. So I wrote some treatments and then got little story outlines basically, and some simple storyboards, and then got some other talented individuals I've worked with in the past, who I know have got experience in doing music videos and working kind of low budget, tight constraints, and so they got involved, and we were able to work together and create the videos.
That's great. So, by the way, I really love the movie. The only scene I didn't like, and I would jump to that first, is the end credits. There is this scene on the large stage. I didn't like that one.
Okay.
it was because I said, okay, this could be imagination in my head. Its story could go on this way, but it was not this character I have known for the last 90 minutes.
Right, okay, yeah. Well, it was always there in the script to see, you know, years on, we wanted to just give the audience the kind of hint of things for Steve, the kind of older character, you know, the last things we see of him in prison, and he's been through a lot of grief, and we wanted to give a sense of hope, you know, and his whole story is about him having lost a child, you know, many years ago, and so through this final scene, we get to see him, you know, having this kind of surrogate son, and they go out and do something together, and so it, you know, ties that story together.
Okay. So that's one point. Before we come to the acting and the shooting, it's about the music. It's, I would say, the music has its own character in this movie, because you have this, the sound of the rock star and his band. You have him as a musician, writing lyrics, writing songs, and going on. So who composed all these different types and styles of sounds?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different music in there. Primarily, we, you know, all the original material, the stuff that Tom, the character, performs and writes, all of that was written by a team of musicians called Yellow Boat Music. And I was able to work very closely with them, because I had ideas that I really wanted to give the thing a kind of Coldplay, U2, Radiohead type vibe to Tom's sound. And so we worked very closely on creating the songs for Tom's soundtrack. And then when we got into the Steve side, I wanted to give him a kind of much darker, more mature, kind of more aged sound. And so we got we managed to get in touch with this artist called John Fairhurst, who does this very deep bluesy stuff. Incredible deep voice. Amazing guitarist, and he became the soundtrack for Steve, and it was great that he was just so supportive of the film. We didn't have a lot of budget, but he was happy for us to use his tracks in the film. So he became a big soundtrack for Steve. Yeah.
And come back to Tom, so did he have to sing for real, or is it
Yeah, part of the casting was number one, he's got to be able to act, he's got to play the character. But it was really important to have someone who could sing and someone who could play the guitar. And that's quite a lot to ask. But we interviewed, auditioned a lot of young guys when they came in for auditions. I wanted them to do a Radiohead song because I knew it would kind of challenge them, but it had the right kind of emotion. And we had some great, you know, some great auditions. But when Nick came in, he did it differently to everyone else. He didn't try to sound like Tom York from Radiohead. He just did it in his own way. And he's got his own style of singing, his own style of music. He's his own, you know, singer-songwriter in his own right. And so it just stood out that here's a guy who's just got something. He's not trying to be someone else. He is someone. And as a director, I love when casting to just bring people in, get them to do some improv, challenge them, and just find out, who are they? Are they going to bring something to my film that I haven't even imagined? Because that's a real joy. I mean, a lot of it, you know, you as a director, you're controlling things and want this to be that way. But with actors, they've got their own minds, their own character, and when they bring something of themselves to the film, that's when you get something special, something more than you imagined. And so Nick did that. And so he sang and performed all the songs.
That's perfect. Sounds great. So you found all the right people. You had a good story. You had your contacts to the animation people for the video, and you found your great main actors. I think he's the main actor. Even there's a father figure and his father, his real father, his mother, and so on. But yeah, he's in, I think, almost every scene of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like to follow one key character, and even at the early script stage, there was a decision of whose story is this, whose story should we follow, and it could have gone either way. We could have focused more on Steve's story, but we chose actually to focus more on the Tom's story. We can relate to that innocence, but we would still delve into Steve's story, his kind of darker past. But we wanted Tom to be the protagonist, and Tom to be the one that helps unlock Steve from the demons of his past and kind of set him free. So, yeah.
I really liked what you did with his character. So, you can, even if there are no words, and they're often at the beginning there are no words, you can just his expression, his face and what he's doing, and he walks in somewhere, he's listening to music and he doesn't realize the people around him. He realizes the world but not the people. That's what I think.
And Nick performed that so well. I mean, I gave him some briefing on it and some background, but I just let him explore it, and he came back to me and he was saying, I think Tom would be doing this and Tom would be doing that. And it's just some little things that Nick always wanted, the one of his shoelaces to be undone, and he had this little walk that he wanted him to do, and he always wanted to push his glasses up in the middle and just be a bit uncomfortable. We got him clothes that didn't quite fit him, so he was literally quite uncomfortable in these very ugly glasses, but they all helped Nick become this character. And so, you know, what we see hopefully on the screen is something that is, you know, he's become that because of the environment he's put himself in, but very much Nick, his take on Tom.
He's gonna be that character for 18 days at least.
Yes.
I still can't believe 18 days. It seems so quick. Does this really work? You have to do a lot of compromise, but I couldn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly challenging. I mean, I come from a background where I'm quite a visual director, and visual directors, we just demand more time, basically. So I've done short films. I've had 5 or 6 days to do 15 minutes. And suddenly to have like 18 days to do, feature length film was an impossible task. And so that's why we spent like 3 months, in the pre-production time. I didn't spend as much time as I'd normally like to spend. I normally like to storyboard everything. But in our pre-production, I had to focus on getting great music and just getting the story, getting the script as tight as possible, because we didn't want to lose days on shooting scenes that weren't going to make it. But it was, it was very challenging. I didn't think it was going to be possible, and it became possible. We didn't lose, in terms of shooting schedule, we shot every scene we intended to shoot. You know, and obviously you didn't get all the coverage and all those nice wide shots you really dream of, but we got, I think we got every scene, we got every story point that we intended to get, so that was very satisfying, yeah.
And the locations, was there really something, or at least a lot of location, because we had this building, the flats where they live, they upstairs, he downstairs and so on, or was it all a set, a studio?
I mean, I love studios, I love sets, because you've got control. You make it, you can put the camera where you want, you take walls down. We didn't have the budget for it, basically. We were in a tiny flat, both Steve's room and Tom's house, very small flats in a cramped part of South London. It was a real challenge. You know, you've got a crew, you've got at times maybe 8 people in a very small room. You got actors who've been in there for hours with burning hot lights. It was very challenging.
Was it harder to do the crowded scenes with the concerts, or harder to shoot in the room with 8 people and the actors on?
I was most, the last day we shot in the Bedford Arms, which is where the Battle of the Bands take, and it was nice to have that as our final shoot day, because that's the kind of climax of the film in many ways, and I was very much looking forward to that day. But it was, yeah, it was difficult because, you know, managing all the people and the logistics of that space was, I thought we were going to be able to move fast, and that was the one day when we had a second camera running. But it was a challenge because there's a lot of people, a lot of noise, just trying to organize everyone around. And again, there was some sweeping shots that I planned that would have, set the scene, and, as a director, you want to get the scale nice and big, but we weren't able to get every shot, but I think we got, again, every story point. And there's a lot of story that happens in that scene that's non-verbal. We're tying up a lot of stories, the moment between Tom and his mum, the moment between Tom and Felix, the girl, they kind of reconcile Steve appears back on stage, you know, the kind of the bully kid gets, you know, shown up. There's a lot of kind of visual payoffs happening in that scene, and that was very hard to edit. We spent a lot of time on that, but I think judging by the crowd last night at the premiere, well, it sounds like we got that scene.
Another scene I really liked was on the rooftop when they're rehearsing the song. So it looks great. What was it?
Yeah, that was actually, yeah, good question. That was actually the roof of the Bedford Arms where we did the Battle of the Bands. So different location than the actual flats. But again, in the script, you know, the script had a lot more scenes that were kind of indoors and intimate. And I just thought, you know, there is, you know, we're going to get this claustrophobia and this tightness of people being stuck in flats, but we're trying to make a film for cinema, and we need to get out a bit more, we need to see the expanse. And so you know, so we decided to rewrite all of those scenes, all the scenes we see on the roof were indoors before, but by putting them on the roof we get the sky, we get to see London skyline, we get trains going by, it just gives it a whole new dynamic. It also works for the character who wants to be free, and he's stuck in his flat and he gets on top and, yeah, to the roof. So yeah, that was a nice location. We had a bit more space up there.
And it's the view is great, and the location, and it's a place where you can see all everything, or at least where your main character could see everything, but doesn't need to get involved with everything he sees.
Yeah, there he is, just above London, looking out across London. But yeah.
Perfect. So the film is now at the Berlinale. I thought it was on a festival, and it already was on a festival, but not.
It was in terms of another festival. Oh, yeah. There's the film was supported by a festival in the UK called Raindance. Okay. So that you know, they help support the film. So they have a little festival every year in London. So that was, you know, we first were able to show it there, and that's where the cast and crew first got to see it. But this festival is obviously one of the biggest ones in the world, and this is the, you know, this is when we've had an audience of 1,000 people seeing it. So this is the international premiere, and it's been very, very exciting.
So what's going to happen to the movie now? You still know?
Well, this is the producers, up to the producers now. I will do as much pushing of it as possible, but I know they're busy, you know, dealing with distributors, and basically the aim is to get as many people to see it as possible. I think when we were making it, when we were, you know, cutting it, we thought we want to make this for the people. We'd love it to get into some of these amazing festivals, but we want to make a film that the people enjoy. So so it's very important for me and the producers to get it out to as many cinemas, and doing interviews and this sort of thing, just to raise the profile so people get a chance to see this film is all good.
Yeah, and you have to see it in the cinema. It's completely different from a small screen, or even if you have a large screen.
Yes, I mean, again, seeing it last night here in the festival, I've never seen it in a screen that big before, and it just heightens the experience. And I think when I'm in post-production stages, particularly working with the sound and the music, I'm just looking big at the screen, and I'm just imagining, I just want this immersive experience. And definitely with the music sections, you want to be immersed in it. And so seeing it last night, I felt this is just perfect. This is the perfect kind of screening environment.
And you get it, because he starts very... the sound is very low on his guitar, it's stereo from the front, and then when he starts playing, it's coming around you. That's a great thing you did.
Yeah. I mean, I love sound design, and playing with those sorts of things to draw you into the film. I love to, you know, to actually, so you feel in the film. So there's times when you're outside, and then as the film goes on, as a scene progresses, you get drawn into it, and then that's, you know, it's great.
So what's your next project?
Well, I've got a couple of projects, as always, developing projects. One project that I'm particularly excited about at the moment is a kind of lo-fi, sci-fi project I'm working with a writer on. And it's a kind of parallel world type scenario, but in a way that we have never seen before. So that's called Reconnect. And yeah, hopefully that will be going forward soon.
Okay. So thanks for the interview, and I wish you a lot of success with your movie. I really liked it, so I enjoyed it. I hope many other people will as well.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
When did you get to see it?